Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening, Jim Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you ever so much for tuning in and taking time out of your evening to listen to me. I always appreciate it. Well, today we've got some things we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about, believe it or not, the mafia. And yes, the mafia, in my opinion, were domestic terrorists. People don't ever define them that way. But the reality is with some of the things that they did, in my opinion, they really do fit into that classification. And I'll explain why. And we're also going to be talking about another area, and that's about radicalization of Americans and how to become radicalized. So we've got some issues that we need to address with that. Before we do that, I want to give you my tips of the day. My tips on the day, listen, you know, a lot of times people travel. So when you're out there traveling, let me give you a couple of things to do to protect yourself, at least from somebody getting away with some of your valuables or your wallet. Here's what you do. You know those credit cards that you get, and those credit cards become outdated? They're no good anymore? Get yourself a wallet, and let it look like it's kind of a used wallet, or take one of your old used wallets, and then take those old credit cards and kind of stick them in there. And then when you're out traveling or you're out and about or you're traveling overseas, somebody tries to rob you, instead of giving them your good wallet, you turn around and hand them that fake wallet with that fake ID with the expired credit cards. They're not going to check, look for the expiration dates at that point. They're going to take off running, and they're not going to get that one until later. I may have mentioned it on one of my earlier shows, but the issue came up recently, and somebody asked me to emphasize that because they were in a similar situation, and they said it worked perfect for them. So I'm bringing that up. That's a good little tip to do. In addition to that, here's another one for you that we picked up, actually a tip from somebody a few days ago. And that is, if you're going to be traveling abroad or traveling around, you look, ladies, you wear these expensive rings that these guys spend all this money for to give you, and now you're out and about and somebody robs you, now they've got your wedding ring. Look, go get yourself some costume jewelry. So when you're out and about, you have that little fake jewelry on, or you're traveling, you know, someplace that you're not sure about, now you've got that fake jewelry. They turn around and say, give me your ring. Hey, no problem. And you're handing them that fake ring. That's something to think about, ladies. Some ladies don't like getting up off of that expensive carrot that was given to her. But especially if you're going to be traveling out of the country, in my opinion, you never know. It just might help. Who cares? You know, you're married. You know you're married. Doesn't matter about that expensive ring being on your finger at that point. But you still want to wear a ring so that way you keep some of the hounds off you as well. So think about getting those fake rings, okay? All right. Now, as usual, you know what I want to do. I'm always going to talk about my emails before I start talking about the mafia and some of these other and the radicalization as well. So I'll start by reading an email that I received, and this is going to be kind of interesting and I think very timely. But it says, Jim, I have been listening to your show since last year and appreciate the focus you have given on domestic terrorism. Oh, I'm getting a call right now, so let's see. Let me address that first. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Mr. Potts, my name is Don. I understand you're going to talk about the mafia today.
Yes, that's correct.
I have a question for you.
And what would that be?
Do you own a horse?
No, I own a goldfish.
Too bad. That always works. You know, Mr. Potts, the mafia were not terrorists. We were businessmen. It was all about business. It just happened to be a cutthroat business. Now, Mr. Potts, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Stop talking about the mafia, or there may be a guy with no neck waiting for you after the show.
Well, I got to tell you something. I'm not really concerned about that. I'm in a very secure location. Where are you located so I can make sure I can call the authorities?
New Jersey. You ever watch The Sopranos?
Yeah, I do. I've watched The Sopranos.
Yeah, I'm in that part of New Jersey.
You're in that part of New Jersey. So I don't have to worry about you then if you're out there, right?
No, not really.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. But, you know, I want to tell you something. You know, the business about the mafia, though, and I understand that it was a business and that's how people operate and, quite frankly, how they still operate. But the realities are, I have to tell you, I do believe that they are a part of domestic terrorism. There were a lot of hitmen through the mafia. I'm actually going to be going through a list like this and possibly maybe even your name's on the list. I know you said your name is Don. Do you have a real name? Maybe your name is one of the ones on this list, sir.
Not that very much. I go to very good security measures to make sure my name don't appear on anything.
Now, you know, you sound a lot like the guy from The Godfather. You know, I watched this movie, The Godfather, with Marlon Brando, but I know he has passed away, so you can't be him.
No, we all talk like this.
Oh, you do?
Oh, my guys talk like this.
Hey, listen.
Yeah, you know who it is.
Yeah, this sounds like one of my regulars out there from New Jersey. As soon as you said New Jersey, you were kind of a giveaway. Is this Jim from New Jersey?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist. You gave me a perfect setup. I couldn't resist. But you know, you are right. There were terrorists, but it what really was all about business. It wasn't terrorists in your traditional sense like today. It was all about business, you know. And all you have to do is look at the movie The Untouchables that Kevin Costner did 30 years ago. It did terrorism and that, but it was about business.
But you know what? I'm actually going to bring that up because that was about prohibition. So one of the things when I get to this section that I'm going to talk about, but I've got a trivia question for you. Do you know when the whole issue with the mafia started in terms of when they came to this country?
No.
Let me tell you,
no.
I'll tell you something. It was after the Civil War. There was a lack of labor in this country because of the fact that so many men had gotten killed. Think about all the men that got killed during the Civil War. So it's what they did. There were labor issues over in Italy and Sicily more specifically. And by the way, I'll tell you something else. The word mafia, that's actually, they say, it comes from an Arabic term because Italy at one time was under the control of Arabia, apparently, something to that nature. So this word actually is derived from an Arabic term, they say. But at any rate, they came to this country, and they had their issues, and I'll get a little bit more into that in a few minutes. But they came here, and they were here after the Civil War, and then after the turn of the century, there was issues because they were being mistreated, as so many other people are that come to this country, you know, early on in our history, that were being mistreated, and they started forming these collective. I don't want to call them gangs right at the outset, but you know, communities together where they would kind of band together to protect each other. But I'll get a little bit more into that in a few minutes. But right now, I really do, oh, but you know what? One more question before I let you go, Jim. One of the things I'm going to be talking about today. I've been taking a straw poll on the lady because one of my emails has to do. Matter of fact, while you're on the air, I'll just read this email, this other email to you real quick. It says, Jim, I'm curious about your thought about the Alabama woman who joined ISIS and now wants to return. Do you believe she would pose a threat? I think they should let her back. And that's from Susan from St. Louis, Missouri. And I've been taking a straw poll on this, and we'll announce the results on the next show next week. What do you think?
Well, I think they should let her back in, but I think our intelligence community should be allowed to really pick her brain. I mean, she must know a lot about ISIS and what they do and everything, and it could be a good source of information.
You know what I would be interested in? Because one of the things I'm going to be talking about today is radicalization. One of the things that I would be interested in is how she became radicalized. Because I think that's important.
Exactly.
There's a lot of people in this country that have become radicalized and have gone overseas. And, you know, I think that that's the true story that needs to come out as well. Whether they allow her back or not, I think there's that underlying issue where people do become radicalized because of the Internet. And, again, I'll be talking about that one a little bit later. But I've got your vote on that. If any of the other listeners out there want to call in about – you know, with their opinions, you know, whether or not she should, and you don't have to talk about it if you don't want. You could just call and say, Jim, I vote yes, I vote no, and that could be good enough for you. But the number is 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. I am taking a straw poll, as they say. Or you can email me at listenupwithjp@pottsassociates.com. All right? So either one of those two would be great. But, okay, Jim, I appreciate you calling. I appreciated that little bit there at the beginning. I just, you know, when you were talking like that, I was reaching into my case to get my gun out because I wanted to make sure that I was going to be okay getting up out of here. But now that I know it was you, I'll stick it back in its holster. All right, Jim. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
In. All right. Bye.
You're welcome. Take care. Take care, Jim. Bye.
Bye. Oh yeah, that was Jim from New Jersey. He's kind of a regular caller, so I always appreciate that. At any rate, let me get back to my email, though. It says, Jim, I've been listening to your show since last year and appreciate the focus you've given on domestic terrorism. I would like to suggest that you consider opening up the discussion on the international terrorism for those of us that travel internationally. Any insight on a global level would be appreciated. And that's from Ricardo, San Diego. You know, Ricardo, I tell you, I have been thinking about that as well. And I think that I will offer some international viewpoints and things that are happening, because it's true. A lot of people are traveling internationally, and maybe I shouldn't limit myself to just the domestic terrorism. And that's what I'll be doing from time to time. I will be addressing that as well. All right? Okay. Now, and like I said, I was also going to do this poll because I just read this other email I read when Jim was on the line. I'll read it again, but I'm curious about what you think about the Alabama woman who joined ISIS and now wants to return. Do you believe that she will pose a threat? I think they should not let her come back. I should let her come back. Susan, St. Louis, Missouri. Now, Jim from New Jersey thinks yes. So I have, this is, you know, two yeses right there. I'm not going to disclose the other ones that I've already received emails on. And also other people that I've actually questioned about it as well. So I'll give you the results of that next week. One final email is that, hey, Jim, Oklahoma just passed a law that they're going to have the open carry law in Oklahoma. And, you know, I'd like to know your feelings about that, because they're also indicating it's going to be without any background check at all. And the vote by the politicians was 40-6 in favor of that. What concerns me is the fact that it's going to be with no background check. Now, think about what happened with that guy not too long ago when he lied about his background check, et cetera. And yes, that's one way around it. You know, I get that. That's just me commenting now, not in the email. But no background check. The only requirement, according to this email, is that 21 or over will only be allowed to carry. So, at any rate, that's signed by Michael. Michael, look, yeah, I mean, again, I'm not in favor of any of those kind of things. The vote was 40-6, you're right about that, and it's 14 states now that have, you know, the right to carry. My concern is now that they're talking about no background check at all. Now, I know that the Congress recently is addressing this issue, you know, about the background checks. I think that that's extremely important, and I hope they don't eliminate that. It won't keep everybody from getting a gun, but listen, if we could keep half of them, 25% of them, in my opinion, then that's all a help, that's for sure. So, I don't know. We just have to wait to see how it turns out. The advocates, the gun advocates, all say that these things help keep down crime. I don't know. That's always a matter of debate, you know, the office debates as well as the political debates, and, you know, sitting around the dining room table, families are debating these same issues. All right, now, in terms of the Alabama woman, I am going to come back to that, I promise, because I want to give some information on her, and I also want to talk about radicalization. But first, as promised, I really do want to talk about the mafia. Now, this is part of, I always like talking about history as well. So this is kind of a combination of domestic terrorism and history. And with mafia, people don't normally associate the two, as I was telling Jim earlier. Before I read into this, I want to just, make a sort of a disclaimer, because I don't want to be getting all this hate mail. Look, my mentor when I was coming up was Italian-American, and he was my mentor. He taught me a lot of things. Boxing was one of the things he taught me. And, you know, he was the person I could go to and talk to. So I want to make it clear, I have no problems with Italian-Americans. All I'm doing is approaching this from an historical standpoint only. All right? So I'm glad I don't have a horse. I've only got a goldfish. I may not have to worry about anything. At any rate, look, let's start off by just talking about the fact of what Mafia is. Mafia is a type of organization, is an organized crime syndicate, whose primary activities are protection, racketeering, arbitrating disputes between criminals, brokering and enforcing illegal agreements and transactions between themselves. Mafias often engage in secondary activities such as gambling, loan sharking, drug trafficking, prostitution, and fraud. Now, as I just told the listener not too long ago, the term mafia was originally applied to the Sicilian mafia, and it did originate in Sicily. But it has since expanded to encompass other organizations of similar methods and purpose. For example, I'll tell you, and I'm sure you've seen this probably on TVs or documentaries about the Russian mafia or the Japanese mafia. So the term really is applied informally, not only by the public, but also by the press. The criminal organizations themselves have their own terms. Some of them call it the Sicilian mafia or the Italian mafia. Some refer to their organizations, most commonly known as also the Cosa Nostra. The Japanese mafia calls itself Yakuza, and the Russian mafia groups often call themselves Bratva. All right? So those are the most common ones that we've probably seen or heard in movies and things about, you know, things of that nature. Now, look, I kind of briefly mentioned it to Jim about how the mafia came to the United States. But here's the deal. Large groups of Italian migrant workers, and they were really from the south of Italy, and they did come after because of the United States labor shortage as a result of the Civil War. So they did come here because of all the slave labor that was done at that point. So literally hundreds of thousands of people that were killed in the war created this vacuum, and that vacuum had to be satisfied. Now you might look at that and say, well, wait a minute, if you had all of these slaves that were just freed from bondage, you know, wouldn't that have been some of the labor force? Well, keep in mind that some of them had no interest in working for anybody, and a lot of them migrated away, even went out west. So the labor force, the way you might be thinking about it, was still not there necessarily. Some of them didn't want to work anymore for the plantations. Some of them are elected to stay. Some of them became sharecroppers, etc. All right, so... So just to keep in mind, as the migrant laborers from Sicily arrived, they were also met with prejudice and discrimination. You know, that's who our country was. Some people argue that's who they still are. I don't want to get into the politics of that. But when the Italians first came here, they met with opposition. They were met with opposition. The Chinese, when they came here, the Irish during the Irish potato famine, these were all immigrants to this country. And it is ironic, and I know this is a big issue that's out there, it is ironic that a country that was, you know, basically created, founded, you know, by immigrants from other countries, why they later, and it's not necessarily them, by the way, let me make that clear, maybe their ancestors, because once these individuals became Americans per se, they were not part of the transition, maybe from Europe and other places when they came here. So let's just keep that in mind also. All right. So anyway, so they were met with prejudice and discrimination. So this is really when the Sicilian word mafioso began to change from a positive connotation in Sicily to a negative and shortened mafia version in the United States. So that's how the word mafia kind of migrated itself, how it changed over the years. Now, here's the problem. When the migrant workers came from Sicily and came here to do work, they created their own labor system, and that was called the padrone system. Now, some of us even to this day know about the word padrone, right? And it basically is what that was. It was based on a boss system, you know, which had already existed during this period anyway. So the word padrone, in an Italian word, it means boss, you know, again, when it was translated into English. Now, a padrone or a boss was the middleman between the English-speaking businessman and the laborers from Sicily. Does any of this sound familiar? Think about the migrant workers that come up here from Mexico. All right? So the other problem was is that some of these individuals couldn't speak English. They weren't able to speak the language. Once again, does any of that sound familiar? So the boss, or the patron, so to speak, was in charge of labor groups, you know, including where they would work and the length of their employment and how much they were paid and living quarters. Now, because labor laws at that time were non-existent during that period, the padrone system, like the boss system, was not immune to what? Corruption. So here you go. All right, now the corruption is starting. Now, many times workers were exploited, never paid, or even given the work that they were promised. Does that sound familiar? As the 19th century turned into the 20th century, the migrant workers from Sicily and the patron system became synonymous with distrust. Strong leaders or padroni, who were mafiosi, became known as the American counterpart, mafia boss. Now that's coming more into the picture. Labor contracts became known as mafia contracts. And these things, when you think about it, if you think about some of these basic movies, like I'll just use The Godfather as an example, because a lot of people know that movie. Murder Incorporated was another good movie with some of this. Some of those things were conceptually were correct in terms of from a historical purpose. Now, as I told Jim earlier, see, a lot of times these workers were exploited, like I said. Now, here's the other concept. The word mafia, as I told Jim earlier, Sicily was once an Islamic emirate. Yeah, from 1831 to 1072. So that's kind of interesting as to in terms of how that word emerges. So it has Arabic roots. Now, let's take this a step further. Let's start bringing this a little bit closer. So the mafia in the United States, the reason why they emerge in impoverished Italian immigrant neighborhoods or ghettos. New York and East Harlem, and I'm a New York boy, you guys know that. The Lower East Side and Brooklyn. It also emerged in other areas of the East Coast of the United States and several other major metropolitan areas such as New Orleans and Chicago. Now, during the late 19th century and early 20th century, following waves of Italian immigration, especially from Sicily and other regions of southern Italy. Now, there's a separate organization in the United States that they brought out, Calabrian, Neapolitan. These were criminal groups that were starting to emerge now, all of Italian descent. So they were independent Italian-American criminals. They emerged with the Sicilian mafiosi to create the modern pan-Italian mafia in North America. Now look, today, the American mafia cooperates in various criminal activities with Italian organized crime groups such as the Sicilian mafia, the Camorra of Naples, all right, and a number of other ones. They look at these and say that these units were called a family. Go back to your movie, The Godfather, a family. That's how they started creating it, togetherness. Despite the name family describe the various units, though, let me tell you something. They are not familial groupings. It has nothing to do with family like that in terms of your family. Now, I will still tell you, most people think, well, the mafia is not around as much. That's not true. The mafia is currently most active in the northeastern United States, especially still in New York City, Philadelphia, New Jersey, Buffalo, and New England, in areas such as Boston. It's in Providence and Hartford as well. It is also heavily active in Chicago and other large Midwestern cities such as Detroit, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Cleveland, St. Louis, and Kansas City, and still in New Orleans and also Florida. Now, a lot of people know about Las Vegas. So let me just tell you, Las Vegas and Los Angeles, they're with smaller families, as well. But they're all out there, all of these different places. It's, again, you just don't hear about as much of them. And Jim's point that he made is well taken when he said that, look, for them, this was business. And a lot of it, when you really go back and look at it very closely, it was all about survival as well. When people are put into a situation where they're forced to survive in any ways that they can, these are the kind of things that happen. Now, understand something else. There are five main New York City mafia families known as the Five Families. That's the Gambino, the Lucchesi, Genovese, Bonanno, and Colombo families. Now, I will tell you that at its peak, the American mafia dominated organized crime in the United States. Each crime family has its own territory. with the exception of the five families, and operates independently. While nationwide coordination is overseen by the, they have a, what they call a commission. The purpose of the commission, by the way, that's how can I say it? That's almost like a group of the leaders from all of these different so-called families. So it really does consist of the bosses from each of the strongest families in the country. So they're the ones who set out what they're going to do, not do. Believe it or not, they monitor and check each other, all of those kind of things. Now, today, most of the mafia's activities are contained in the northeastern United States and Chicago, where they continue to demonstrate organized crime despite the increasing numbers of other crime groups. So they're just a part of it. Now, look, let me tell you. The first published account of what became the mafia in the United States dates back to the spring of 1869. So I want to let you know, again, this is not new. Most people associate it with Prohibition. And you see from the movies, or like Jim was talking about with the Untouchables and, you know, the mob and the shooting and killing up people, which, by the way, from my perspective, is why I put them in a list of categories of domestic terrorism. Because, I mean, let's just go to the movies. Now, you look at the movies and say, okay, those are the movies. No, there's also footage, film footage, actual film footage, where these individuals would ride around and they would shoot people down. They shoot them down in the streets or wherever the person was. Innocent civilians, you know, sometimes got caught up in it as well. Things like what we're most familiar with, the St. Valentine's Day massacre that took place. With 14, it was a 14 people. I think it was a 16 people. Were shot in a garage. This is, in my opinion, this is domestic terrorism. Now, people don't think about that. They want to associate domestic terrorism with lone wolves, such as what's going on right now. ISIS sympathizers, Al-Qaeda sympathizers. But domestic terrorism is domestic terrorism. And don't forget what I told you what the definition was. It's an act by an American and on American soil. And a lot of these individuals we're talking about here, or I'm going to be talking about, they were born here. They 1869 to the 1920s and 30s, these are people that were born here at that point as well. So that's why I keep, harping on the fact that they were a form of domestic terrorism as well. Now, the sad part about it is that anytime you have ghettos, which they had, they had to do what they had to do to survive. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. But they formed an organization called the Black Hand. Now, that was the name that was given to an extortion method using Italian neighborhoods at the turn of the 20th century. It has been sometimes mistaken for the mafia itself, which it's not. The Black Hand was a criminal society, but there were many small Black Hand gangs. Black Hand extortion was often, and wrongly I might add, viewed as activity of a single organization because Black Hand criminals in Italian communities throughout the United States use the same methods of extortion. So there's a difference between the Black Hand and the mafia. And by the way, in some of the upcoming episodes that we're going to be doing on this show, I'm going to start labeling, and not labeling, let me back up. I don't want to call it labeling. I'm going to start presenting other groups in this country that are considered terrorist groups, because I think that's important as well. Now, I can tell you that the first known mafia member to immigrate to the United States, his name was Giuseppe Morello. He was the first known mafia member. Now, he and six other Sicilians fled to New York after murdering 11 wealthy landowners and the chancellor and vice chancellor of a Sicilian province. But he was arrested in New Orleans in 1881. And then they extradited him back to Italy, where he faced the ultimate test, we'll call it. Now, New Orleans, and see, I never associate New Orleans. I used to go to New Orleans a lot, but I never associated New Orleans with the mafia. But New Orleans was also the site of the first mafia incidents in the United States. They received both national and international attention. So on October 15th, 1890, New Orleans police superintendent David Hennessy was murdered execution style. Now, they say it's still unclear whether Italian immigrants actually killed him or whether it was a frame-up by nativists. against the reviled underclass immigrants. But hundreds of Sicilians were arrested on mostly baseless charges, and 19 were eventually indicted for murder. See, here we go. You know, baseless charges. We can't have a system that does things like this. But this, again, it's 1890. The blood is boiling. People are upset. So they were actually acquitted. Now, when they were acquitted, what comes out after that? Rumors of bribery and witness intimidation. So as a result of that, on March 14th, 1891, the outraged citizens of New Orleans organized a lynch mob. A lynch mob, and proceeded to kill 11 of the 19 defendants. Two were hanged, nine were shot, and the remaining eight escaped. Now, from a perspective of time, from the 1890s to 1920 in New York City, the Five Points Gang, who was founded by this guy named Paul Kelly, they were very powerful in Little Italy of the Lower East Side. Kelly recruited street hoodlums, who he later became some of his famous crime bosses of the century, such as, and I don't know if some of you older people may remember these names, but Johnny Torrio. How about Al Capone? That should be a name that you know. Lucky Luciano and Frankie Yale. Those are all common names. We've seen those in movies and documentaries and the rest of it. And they were often in conflict with the Jewish Eastmans of the same area. Now, there was also an influential mafia family in East Harlem. They call them the Neapolitan Camorra. They were very active in Brooklyn, which is where we were from. In Chicago, the 19th Ward was an Italian neighborhood that became known as the Bloody 19th due to the frequent violence in the ward, mostly as a result of the mafia actively, you know, doing feuds and vendettas. So that's why I say, once again, that, you know, they were domestic terrorists, no matter how you cut it. And, you know, I'm not saying it was wrong about what happened with these lynch mobs and things like that, because that kind of behavior, you want to know the truth, is obviously as wrong. But then finally, Prohibition hit. Now, for those of you who do not know about Prohibition, you know, it was in 1920. It began with the 18th Amendment to the United States Constitution, making it illegal to manufacture, transport, or sell alcohol, if you can believe that. That was the 18th Amendment. Let me repeat that for some of you that are too young. Making it illegal to manufacture, transport, or sell alcohol in this country. That was in 1920. Now, despite these bans, there was still a very high demand for alcohol from the public. Well, there's no secret about that one. This created an atmosphere that tolerated crime as a means to provide liquor to the public, even among police and city politicians. Now, this was not, in all fairness, this was not explicitly related to the mafia involvement. The murder rate during Prohibition era rose from 6.8 per 1,000 individuals to 9.7 within the first 3 months preceding the 18th Amendment. But, you know, it lent itself to being a problem. Citizens wanted alcohol. The country comes out with the 18th Amendment banning alcohol. What do you think it's going to do? It's going to go underground, your black market. What do you think is going to happen with guns? You ban guns, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to go underground. It's just that simple. Now, in the early 1920s, some of you will remember that Benito Mussolini took control of Italy and waves of Italian immigrants fled to the United States once again. The Sicilian Mafia members also fled to the United States. And as Mussolini cracked down on Mafia activities in Italy, they were leaving. Most Italian immigrants resided in tenement buildings, and as a way to escape the poor lifestyle, some Italian immigrants chose to join the American Mafia. Once again, they were being pushed into this. So that's the sad part. But people have to do sometimes what they have to do. Now, the Mafia actually took advantage of Prohibition and began selling illegal alcohol. Now, the profits from bootlegging far exceeded the traditional crimes of protection, extortion, gambling, and prostitution. Prohibition actually allowed Mafia families to make fortunes. And as Prohibition continued, the victorious factions went on a dominant organized crime in their respective cities, setting up the family structure of each city. Gangs hijacked each other's alcohol shipments, forcing rivals to pay for protection to leave their operations alone, and armed guards almost invariably accompanied the caravans that delivered the liquor. Once again, remember the movie that Jim brought up about the Untouchables? There's a scene in there about that. So then the wars began. The wars began because all of the different families were trying to gain absolute control, you know, over the rackets. The violent erupted Italians fought Irish and Jewish ethnic gangs for control of bootlegging in their respective territories. So, you know, look, this gives you a flavor for what I'm talking about here. Now, I will be honest with you. Like I said, all Italians are not bad people. I want to make that clear. I'm going to give you one last little piece of structure here, but I'm going to give you some names of the individuals to me that fit more of the profile of why I said the mafia was part of domestic terrorism. Because we were talking about serial killers as an example, and that kind of behavior we know. So they had their own names, okay? The boss headed a family. Then they had an underboss who was actually appointed by the boss and was basically second in command. So you got a supervisor, or you got a manager, now you have a supervisor and an assistant supervisor. Then they had a consigliere. That was an advisor to the family, and sometimes seen as the boss's right-hand man. All right, he mediated disputes, you know, et cetera. Then they had the capo regime. Okay, that was a captain, or like a skipper who's in charge of a crew or a group of soldiers who reported directly to him. So he was kind of like your general. Then, of course, you had your soldiers. And these are the actual names that they use, by the way. So a soldier is a member of the family. Traditionally, can only be a full Italian background. He had to be full-blooded to be a soldier. And then they would have an associate. Associate was not a member of the mafia, but worked for a crime family nonetheless. So that was kind of like a wide range of people who worked for a family. His name is an associate. But let me give you something else right now. Let me give you just some names of some of these hitmen that they've had, starting at not necessarily the worst, but get ready for some of these names. Abe Kid Twist Relis. And he was listed as one of the 10 most dangerous mafia hitmen in history. Now, he was a natural-born killer. He was violent, unpredictable, and an early member of the gang named Murder Incorporated. So they say that the American and Jewish mafia have been believed to have killed up to 1,000 people during the 1930s and 20s. Don't tell me they weren't domestic terrorists at that point. That is a lot of individuals. And those gang wars between them, innocents got caught up in it. This particular guy, he used to ice pick his victims. You know, he'd ram the ice pick into their brains through their ears. I mean, this is what you call viciousness here. Viciousness. He finally met his end. He was found dead on the pavement outside his hotel room in 1941. So the press called him the canary that could not sing, because as soon as he got caught, you know what he tried to do? He tried to wiggle out of the death penalty by ratting out his boss. Well, he got his in the long run. Okay, next, Salvatore Sammy Bull Gravano. He was another mob rat who evaded justice by squealing on his colleagues, by the way. He was a part of the Gambino crime family. After being arrested, you know, along with Gotti in December of 1990, you guys might remember that, it was all over the news, he turned stool pigeon and sold his boss down the river. But they say he did 19 killings by himself. In 1994, the state sentenced him to only 5 years in prison. And because he had already served 4 of them, his sentence amounted to 1 year's jail time. That was it. Yeah. Sad but true. Sam DeStefano was another one. He worked for Chicago Crime Syndicate, and he's one of the most feared and brutal enforcers. His career began as a political fixer and petty criminal. Let's go. Frank the Dasher Abbandando. This particular individual, another piece of work, obviously. He was a New York career hitman, believed to have been responsible for as many as 30 murders. He killed most of his victims by stabbing them in the chest with an ice pick. Sometimes he used a meat cleaver. And you don't think this was an act of domestic terrorism? He was finally executed. They got rid of him. Harry Pittsburgh Phil Strauss, another piece of work. He also worked for Murder Incorporated. They said that he killed at least 30 people as well. But historians really believe that he's somewhere between 50 and 100, possibly more. Tommy Karate Pitera. Well, this guy, I don't know. To me, he may have been a lightweight in terms of the other ones. You think so? I'm just kidding. He's believed to have carried out as many as 60 murders during his career. These guys are killing more people than serial killers. Joseph the Animal Barboza. All right, he's another one. Contract killer. He got the nickname The Animal. His boss told him, because he slapped somebody one day, his boss told him, I don't want you slapping him. I don't want you to touch anybody again with your hands. So what did he do? One of his people, he bit the man's ear off and chewed on his cheek. Chewed on his cheek. That's why they call him The Animal. In the end, in February 1976, he was murdered, despite one of the first criminals to be used in a witness protection program. Yeah, he was in a witness protection program, but they still found him. You ever see that movie called Eraser? At any rate, let me keep moving. Giovanni the Pig Brusca claimed to have been murdered as many as 200 people. 200. You don't think he's not worse than a serial killer? Yeah. And then finally, the number one guy was Richard the Iceman Kulinski. This guy would kill his victims and then put them in deep freeze so that he could throw the cops off, that when they finally got the body, they would think that they wouldn't be able to tell how long the person has been dead, if you're ready for that one. That's why they call him the Iceman. They say he was one of the most cold-blooded of killers. They finally caught him in 1986. He ended up dying in prison in 2006. But that just gives you an idea that why I wanted to talk about the mafia as part of this domestic terrorism business. Now, is what I want to do is turn my attention to this business about the radicalization, because I think that's very important, and I want to address the email that was sent to me as well. Now, look, just to let you know, radicalization is a process by which an individual or group comes to adopt extreme political, social, and religious ideals and aspirations that reject or undermine the status quo or contemporary ideas and expressions of the nation. The outcomes of the radicalization are shaped by the ideas of society at large. Now, let me give you an example. Radicalism can originate from a broad social consensus against progressive changes in society or from a broad desire for change in society. Radicalization can be both violent and nonviolent, although most academic literature focuses on radicalization into a violent extremism. And there's multiple pathways that constitute the process of radicalization, which can be independent but are usually mutually reinforcing. Now, I will tell you, this lady that wants to come back here, let me give you a little bit of information about her, first of all right? Because, again, this is part of my straw poll. Her name, for those of you that have not picked up on this, and you can Google it, is Hoda, H-O-D-A, Muthanna, M-U-T-H-A-N-A. All right? Now, look, she was a 20-year-old college student in Alabama when she joined the Islamic State in 2014. She used Twitter to encourage terrorist attacks in the West. And now she says she regrets it and wants to return to the United States. Now, she says after being smuggled into the caliphate, Hoda Muthanna posted a photograph on Twitter showing her gloved hands holding her American passport. On there, she had written, "Bonfire soon," she promised. That was 4 years ago. Now, first of all, you know we've got ISIS on the run. They're forcing them out of their most recent stronghold. And now she wants to come back. But look, that's after being married to three, not one, not two, but three Islamic State fighters and witnessing executions like those she had once cheered on social media. She says that she's deeply sorry and wants to return to the United States. Now, as what she's done, she surrendered last month to the coalition forces fighting ISIS, and she spends her days as a detainee in a refugee camp in northeast Syria. And she's actually joined in by another woman from the United States named Kimberly Pullman. Kimberly's 46, and she studied legal administration in Canada before joining the caliphate. And she possesses dual United States and Canadian citizenship. Now, both of these women have been interviewed by the New York Times at the camp, and they said they were trying to figure out how to have their passports reissued and how to win the sympathy of the two nations they scorned. Now, I'll be honest, Ms. Pullman says that she doesn't have words for how much regret she has, and regret or not. I mean, like I said, these are things that they did. Again, if anybody wants to comment on this, it's 818-602-4929. Now, here's the deal. Now, Ms. Multana wants to say, once I look back on it, I can't stress how much of a crazy idea it was, she said. I can't believe it. I ruined my life. I ruined my future. Now, look, come on. First of all, you're talking about an educated college student. Oh, and by the way, let me tell you how she went overseas. She deceived her parents. Yeah, she told her parents she was going out there to study abroad. I believe it was in Turkey. And she turned around and instead of doing what she told her parents she was going to do, she turned around and went and joined ISIS. And that was that. I mean, that's how she did it. And I don't know. You know, she grew up in an ultra-strict household. She says no partying, no boyfriends, and no cell phone. And when she finished high school, her father gave her a phone as a graduation gift. And that became her portal to the world of extreme Islam. So it only took her 2 years. Online contact. They walked her through the steps of joining the Islamic State. She said, they told her, board a flight to Turkey. When you land, call this number. And for her to pay for the trip, she enrolled in a class at the University of Alabama. So when they say Birmingham. Now, think about that. The only thing that she did, okay, is enroll in classes at the University of Alabama, all right, at Birmingham. Then when she was a sophomore business major, she then withdrew from the school and cashed a tuition check from her parents. She packed a book bag with her clothes in it, told her family she was going to an event in Atlanta, a two-hour drive away. Instead, she headed directly to Birmingham Airport for a flight to Istanbul. And now this lady wants to come back here to this country. Now, look, personally, I'm not comfortable with this. I don't know. She's been radicalized, but I don't know, other than her just showing her sympathy, that she has been rehabilitated, and I think that's part of it. Now, Jim says that is what we ought to do is let her come back and then basically pick her brain to find out about ISIS and how it all happened. In my opinion, although I appreciate that, that opinion, look, it's the radicalization part that I'm concerned about. And once they're radicalized like that, all of a sudden you're telling me that they've seen the light of day and that's it? You think you could come back with just an apology? I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. Suppose some of these serial killers at the end, they get caught. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. How do you take back the damage that you've already done? And not to mention the fact that she's married not once, not twice, but three times to ISIS fighters. They were all killed. One gets killed, she takes on another husband. That one gets killed, she takes on another husband. That's problematic for me. Now, let me just tell you something. These citizens who become radicalized, they really fall into three groups. So I want to make sure you're clear on that. The first group are those who want to leave to join ISIS but have not yet done so. We call them radicalized wannabes. He's just a wannabe. Policy should focus on preventing these individuals from making a trip. If they never make it to Syria, they can neither return to conduct an attack nor serve in ISIS ranks in Syria or Iraq. They will not grow into masterminds who plan attacks in the United States. All right? That's your first group. Your second group are those who manage to elude law enforcement and depart for Syria. We should have a policy that should focus on taking them into custody for prosecution if they ever decide to return. Assuming they survived the battlefield in Syria, these terrorists can be flagged and identified through screening, even if they pretend to be refugees. All right? So that's your first and second groups. Your third group, and I have to tell you, it's the one probably that's most frightening. And the reason for that is that this group consists of those who are interested in joining ISIS but are deterred by the prospect of being caught leaving for Syria or may otherwise be convinced to plan an attack here. That's the problem. A report from the Center on National Security, Fordham Law, suggests that some who have planned domestic attacks in the name of ISIS have done so because of the increasing difficulty of traveling to Syria. Think about it. Those countries are on the watch list. We don't let people just board a plane necessarily to there because, you know, through the State Department. So those are the ones you have to watch out for, because they can't get over there. They've been radicalized, as we've seen. There have been people, as you know, on the news that were radicalized, and then they create all of these mass murders. And that's going to be problematic for us every single time. So at any rate, I'd be interested in your sending me an email. The email is listenupwithjp@pottsassociates.com. Again, I'll repeat that. listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. If you want to get on my blog or email blast about upcoming show topics, text POTS Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email. Again, text POTS Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email. All right? And again, I'd be interested, because I do want to have the results of whether or not we should let this person come back. I'd be interested in seeing what the listeners believe should happen in terms of her re-entry into the United States. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. I have so much fun doing this. I always hate closing out the show. But let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Hey, be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, spread the word. The other thing I want to tell you very quickly, look, if you've got some topics you'd like me to talk about, hey, send me an email. You know, I'll look them up. I'll talk about it. Some people, they do that. So, yeah, so do that for me. Until then, hey, be aware, be vigilant and safe, but more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Be safe, and I will see you next time.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.